KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego's Art Power, presenting Good Writing, an evening with Anne Lamott and Neil Allen at the Balboa Theater on April 1. Tickets at artpower.ucsd.edu.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Thursday, December 11th. We hear from a woman who was detained by ICE for several days. More on that next, but first, the headlines. San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria yesterday announced an initiative that seeks to allow more affordable home ownership opportunities. 80% of land in San Diego that's zoned for housing is restricted to single-family homes. They're often the most expensive kind of housing. The Neighborhood Homes for All of Us initiative would open some of that land to lower-cost options like townhomes. Gloria says San Diego has been fairly successful at adding to the city's housing supply.
But generally speaking, it's a lot of luxury rental housing and a fair amount of subsidized, deed-restricted affordable housing. What we're looking for is that middle-income housing and hopefully, specifically, homeownership.
Gloria said the initiative's details will be developed over the next year in a series of public workshops, focus groups, and surveys. $12 million in state grant funds will go towards county programs aimed at providing support for people currently experiencing or at risk of homelessness. The San Diego County Board of Supervisors accepted the funds on Tuesday. The money will support a program that taps participating hotels to serve as emergency housing. The county says that program helps up to 250 households every night, with 40% eventually moving on to permanent housing. Other programs include the Local Rental Subsidy Program and the Housing Our Youth Program. Your San Diego Padres will return to Mexico's capital in the new year. The 2026 Mexico City Series takes place on Saturday, April 25th and Sunday, the 26th. The series will see the Padres face off twice against division rival the Arizona Diamondbacks. This is the latest installment of Major League Baseball's World Tour. The event also marks the third time the MLB has visited Mexico City in the regular season, the second for your San Diego Padres. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers, presenting a new 2025 RAV4 with on- and off-the-road versatility and available all-wheel drive with gas, hybrid, and plug-in options available. Visit your Toyota dealer for more. The San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.
ICE has released an immigrant from Ukraine who was arrested after her green card interview last week. She says she was held for days inside a federal building in downtown San Diego. Reporter Corey Suzuki has the details.
Victoria Bulavna and her husband Victor clasped their hands in front of each other, wrists together, palms apart, showing how Victoria says ICE officers shackled her hands and feet. Victor, a U.S. citizen, translates for her.
Victoria managed to get in the van, but it was really painful. It cuts your legs, basically. But some shorter women, they couldn't get there. They was kind of screaming.
Victoria came to the U.S. 3 years ago through a temporary humanitarian program after fleeing the war in Ukraine. She was in the final stages of the green card process when federal agents detained her last week. For 3 days, Victoria says they held her in the basement of a federal building. She says she and other women had to use an open toilet in view of the guards. They were given expired food and didn't have room to sleep. When they were moved, she says ICE officers put them in shackles and chains.
She felt like she's losing her life. She was scared that she would not be able to get her life back.
ICE released Victoria on Tuesday morning. She says she's still not sure why she was released and what will happen with her green card application. And she says she's still thinking about all the other women she was detained with. ICE did not immediately respond to questions on Wednesday. Corey Suzuki, KPBS News.
The San Diego City Council voted Tuesday to continue using automatic license plate readers. Metro reporter Andrew Bowen says it was over the objection of privacy advocates.
San Diego police say ALPRs are a force multiplier, helping detectives find stolen vehicles and solve crimes faster than ever. Critics say they create mass surveillance data that can be hard to contain and protect, in particular from federal immigration authorities. Councilmember Marnie Von Wilpert voted to continue using the technology, saying the benefits to local law enforcement were immense.
I cannot, in good conscience, take away a factual, evidential tool to prevent crimes and keep San Diegans safe on the theoretical possibility that this government, which is doing atrocious things, I agree, could access our data.
City law requires an annual report on surveillance technologies and an annual vote from the City Council to reauthorize their use. Andrew Bowen, KPBS News.
The demolition of the San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station is well underway, but what will happen to its radioactive waste sitting on the coastline? Environment reporter Tammy Merga says county leaders are looking into solutions.
The San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station stopped producing electricity more than a decade ago. Its nuclear fuel is stored about 100 feet from the shoreline.
There's 1,400 tons and over 100 canisters sitting at the San Onofre site of spent nuclear fuel right now.
The plant is in San Diego County Supervisor Jim Desmond's district. He says having the used fuel idle there indefinitely is a problem.
That spent nuclear fuel is still cooking for about the next 1,000 years, and those canisters aren't going to last that long.
In 2015, county leaders asked the U.S. Department of Energy to get rid of the nuclear fuel. They said earthquakes and damage to storage canisters pose risks to the region. The problem is the federal government doesn't have a permanent place to store all of the nation's spent fuel. Desmond says San Diegans shouldn't have to keep waiting. His board colleagues agree. Yesterday, they approved a plan to see if the fuel can be relocated and recycled into new fuel.
Reprocessing it could unlock enormous amounts of energy.
National laboratories and reactor companies are tapping into recycling technologies. Mehdi Suram is a retired nuclear engineer. He says the challenge of removing and recycling is complex, expensive, and
there's still a lot of opposition in America, many states, to nuclear power. They feel it's dangerous.
Southern California Edison owns the nuclear plant. A spokesperson told KPBS that they appreciate the attention to the issue, but that any solution, quote, should hold the federal government accountable to its obligations related to spent fuel storage and disposal. The county will look to partner with laboratories researching fuel recycling. Board members are expected to receive an update in 90 days. Tammy Merga, KPBS News.
A new feature on the social media platform X reveals some influential political accounts are actually foreign actors. Reporter Amita Sharma says the revelation is more evidence of outside efforts to fan division and spread disinformation in the United States. She recently spoke to Imran Ahmed, the founder of the Center for Countering Digital Hate, about the role of social media in America's polarization and what each of us can do about it.
Imran, some of the world's largest tech companies are American-owned. Many people blame these companies' algorithms for not just intensifying political polarization, but cultural polarization. Policy experts tell me that they don't foresee regulation to address this problem anytime soon. Tell me what you're doing to tamp down the spread of disinformation and hate in the online space.
The first thing that we do is we want mandatory transparency of these platforms. We want to have enhanced access to data, which help to inoculate people against the distortive lens of social media. And second of all, where they lead to real harm, and sometimes these things are innocuous or they are in the realms of free speech, but where they lead to, you know, perhaps violence, or they lead to when it's disinformation about, say, healthcare, which can mean people take actions that harm their lives, that we want people to be able to hold them accountable if they're negligent in spreading lies that actually cause real-world human harm.
In the Charlie Kirk case, how much of what was posted online was coming from the right and left?
It's just 0.4% of total posts were calling for retaliatory violence, and 1.2% were glorifying his death. And they reached the same number of views, approximately around 50 million views each. But that's still staggering if you consider that 98% of people were basically saying, this is horrible, you know, I wouldn't wish this on anyone. And they received a fraction of the number of views.
How successful has your center been in countering digital hate?
We've managed to persuade lawmakers in the UK and the EU to actually put in place statutory transparency for these platforms, to create mechanisms for holding them accountable if they harm kids or society. And in the US, we've been working with lawmakers across the political spectrum who care about the impact on kids in particular, but also want to have greater transparency of how these platforms work. Right now, they are a black box. We don't really know how they are distorting the lens and whose agenda they are serving. Any business that harms a consumer, that consumer can take legal action against them. You can't sue a social media company if they harm you or your kids.
You reported last year that Instagram, in the majority of cases, took no action against people who posted toxic content against women politicians, even when those posts violated the platform's own rules. Do you have any updates on that?
The truth is that Instagram has made no real progress in enhancing its ability to both detect and deal with real hate, you know, threats of rape, threats of murder, threats to harm people's families. The truth is that what's happened in that time is Mark Zuckerberg announced that he was actually getting rid of a lot of the enforcement that they had for their rules, for their community standards.
The social media platform X now shows the location of an account, the number of times a username is changed, and when it joined. What is your take on this new tool?
In the very short time that this transparency drive has been there, they've already come back and said, oops, it doesn't work very well, so don't take it too seriously. That's not real transparency. That is a simulation of transparency, a desperate attempt to make themselves part of the conversation around transparency. When in reality, what we want to understand is how their algorithms work, how their content enforcement decisions work, how the advertising reshapes what we see on those platforms.
What can people, regular citizens, do to constrain the divisive effect of social media?
The best way to make sure that social media algorithms aren't reprogramming your understanding of what people are saying and what is normal in society is to put down your phone and go and talk to your other citizens, talk to other people. Because the truth is that social media is inherently, by design, distortive. It seeks to present a world that is completely different to the real world that you live in for only one purpose, which is to keep you addicted, to keep you scared, to keep you emotionally affected so you stay on that platform. There are incredibly unhealthy places to find information and to understand the world around you. And it's better to actually go out and have a conversation. You know, the kids, the Gen Z, they call it touching grass. I think it's time that we all put down our phones and touch a bit of grass.
That was Public Matters reporter Amita Sharma in conversation with Imran Ahmed from the Center for Countering Digital Hate. Another major airline is returning to Palomar Airport in Carlsbad. The County Board of Supervisors made it official yesterday despite neighbors' complaints about noise. North County reporter Alexander Wen tells us there's still turbulence over the issue.
The supervisors approved the lease with United Airlines to operate out of McClelland Palomar Airport.
Chair Lawson, remember that motion passes.
But not without some questions about the legality of the deal. The city of Carlsbad has insisted that Palomar is a general aviation airport, and opening it up to commercial flights constitutes an expansion. Jason Haber is the city's director of intergovernmental affairs.
The city has consistently asserted its role in jurisdiction in making final land use decisions for new or expanded airport land uses, which requires the county to obtain an amendment to the airport's conditional use permit.
A county spokesperson says commercial airlines are using the airport facilities as is, and therefore an amendment is not needed. Carlsbad has joined a citizens group lawsuit against the county over its approval of American Airlines' lease earlier this year. A lawyer for the citizens group says another lawsuit will be filed. Alexander Nguyen, KPBS News.
Elementary school students in the South Bay are competing in the championships for a new sport in their district today. Reporter Jacob Ayer says it's not played on a field or a court, but inside of a room, on a chair, in front of a screen.
Three, two, one, go! Inside of Imperial Beach's Westview campus, game controllers and video screens fill the auditorium. Family and friends gather to watch their third through sixth graders compete in the Bay Clash Championship. Sixth grader Roel Araujo plays for Pence Elementary School.
I was recently moving into my new school, and my mom was looking through clubs because she has work, and she found esports, and I asked her, what's this about? And I got signed in.
Students like Roel are now taking part in the playoffs for the new South Bay Union School District Esports League. It's an organized video game competition. In this case, the game they're playing is Super Smash Bros. On Nintendo Switch. Mendoza Elementary esports coach Adrian Castro says esports are similar to any other sports.
Esports teaches them a lot of life skills. You know, it teaches them about discipline, and this particular game itself, you know, teaching them about working with a teammate.
And in some cases, gaming is helping in the classroom too.
They were coming in every day. Some of our students who had a lot of like absenteeism issues, they were actually coming into school excited to participate.
The San Diego County Office of Education says South Bay Union is the first elementary district in the region to have an esports program. District leaders say season 2 starts in February. Jacob Ayer, KPBS News.
That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. Thanks for listening and subscribing. By doing so, you're supporting public media, and I thank you for that. Have a great day.
KPBS On Demand is supported by PaintCare, offering households and businesses in California more than 800 leftover paint drop-off sites for recycling. Quantities of 100-plus gallons of paint may qualify for a large volume pickup. Learn more at PaintCare.org.